Chapter 7, Prophecies Concerning Esau, or Edom. Isaac had twin sons, namely Esau and Jacob. And before they were born, it was disclosed to their mother Rebekah by the Lord himself that from these two sons there should proceed two nations. Two manner of people shall be separated from thy bowels, and the one people shall be stronger than the other people, and the elder shall serve the younger. Not only were there to be two nations, but also two manner of people, one being contrary to the other, and even in conflict. Before the children were born, it is said that they struggled together, and this was to be true of their descendants. Also Esau, the firstborn or elder, was to be stronger than Jacob, the younger. And yet eventually the elder was to serve the younger. It is true, this had a typical significance and represented the spiritual conflict which takes place between the flesh and the spirit in those who are truly born again. But it was also verified literally in the two nations which sprang from the two brothers, as we shall see in considering the Edomites, who were the descendants of Esau, for Esau is Edom. The land which they conquered and made their dwelling place was called Edom or Idumea. As Esau grew up, he became a cunning hunter, a man of the field, just the opposite of Jacob, who is said to be a plain man dwelling in tents. Their father Isaac loved Esau because he brought him venison, which he took in hunting. So when Isaac had grown old, he called his firstborn son Esau and said, "Take, I pray thee, thy weapons, thy quiver, and thy bow, and go out to the field and take me some venison, and make me savory meat such as I love, and bring it to me that I may eat, and that my soul may bless thee before I die." Rebekah knew that God had promised her that the elder should serve the younger, and that the younger should therefore have the blessing. But she should have left it to the Lord to bring his promise to pass, instead of devising the way of deceit, which she persuaded Jacob to practice, so that he obtained the blessing instead of Esau. Still, Esau would have a blessing from his father, although he had lost the blessing of Abraham, which had descended first upon his father Isaac, and now had been given to Jacob. All that was left for Esau was an earthly portion, and this his father foretells. "Behold, thy dwelling shall be the fatness of the earth, and of the dew of heaven from above, and by thy sword shalt thou live, and shalt serve thy brother, and it shall come to pass when thou shalt have the dominion that thou shalt break his yoke from off thy neck." It is true that Jacob also had an earthly portion promised him, the dew of heaven, and the fatness of the earth, and plenty of corn and wine. But he had the spiritual blessing as well. So, in course of time, we find that the two brothers had both become so rich in possessions that they could no longer dwell together. Then Esau took his wives and his sons and his daughters and all the persons of his house and his cattle and all his beasts and all his substance which he had got in the land of Canaan and went into the country from the face of his brother Jacob. Esau took his journey towards Mount Seir, which was then occupied by the Horims. But the children of Esau succeeded them when they had destroyed them from before them and dwelt in their stead. In the land of Mount Seir, or Edom, we find the children of Esau have become so increased that there were 14 dukes amongst his sons. Also, they had their reigning kings before there reigned any king over the children of Israel. After Jacob had obtained the blessing, Esau's anger was kindled against him, so that he had to flee from home, which was a punishment both to him and to Rebekah for their deceit. On his way, the Lord appeared to him and confirmed upon him the blessing of his fathers, and coming safely to Paddan Aram, he served his uncle Laban there for 20 years. On his return after that period, Esau came to meet him with 400 men, apparently to execute vengeance upon him. But by prayer to his God, Jacob was delivered, and Esau was friendly towards him. Eventually, Jacob and his sons went down into Egypt, and the Israelites abode there until over 400 years had expired from the time that this had been foretold to Abraham. Then they were brought out by the mighty arm of the Lord, and on their way to the promised land, the first to come out against them was Amalek. Now this Amalek was one of the dukes of Edom, being born to one of Esau's sons, and Timnah, one of the daughters of the Horites, who originally dwelt in that land. Moses had sent a request to the king of Edom to be allowed to pass through their land without touching anything, but this was refused. Instead, it seems that Amalek came out and fought against Israel. But by means of the prayer of Moses, whose hands were held up by Aaron and Hur, Israel prevailed, and the Amalekites were discomfited with the edge of the sword. Because of this action of the children of Amalek, it was declared that the Lord would utterly put out the remembrance of Amalek from under heaven, and would have war with them from generation to generation. So Israel passed on until they came to the crossing of Jordan, and left the children of Esau in possession of Mount Seir, as the Lord had said, "I will not give you of their land, no, not so much as a footbreadth, because I have given Mount Seir unto Esau for a possession." This was to be the earthly portion of Esau, which was promised to him by his father Isaac. But he had no part in the land of promise, nor in the promised seed, as Jacob had. But the elder Esau was to serve the younger Jacob. So in the time of the judges of Israel, the Amalekites were smitten by Gideon. And in the time of the kings of Israel, they were overcome by Saul, and then by David. Edom, as a whole, was also made subject to David, who had garrisons put in the land and made the Edomites his servants. Again, Amaziah, king of Judah, smote the Edomites in the Valley of Salt. On the other hand, when Esau had the dominion, the yoke of Jacob was broken from off his neck, as his father Isaac had promised. Thus we see that Edom revolted from under the dominion of Judah when Jehoram was king and had forsaken the Lord God of his fathers. Now let us look at some later prophecies concerning Edom or Idumea. Jeremiah was instructed to write of the judgments that should come upon her. "I have sworn by myself, saith the Lord, that Bozrah shall become a desolation, a reproach, a waste, and a curse, and all the cities thereof shall be perpetual wastes. I have heard a rumor from the Lord, and an ambassador is sent unto the heathen, saying, Gather ye together and come against her, and rise up to the battle. For lo, I will make thee small among the heathen, and despised among men. Thy terribleness hath deceived thee, and the pride of thy heart, O thou that dwellest in the clefts of the rock, that holdest the height of the hill. Though thou shouldest make thy nest as high as the eagle, I will bring thee down from thence, saith the Lord. Also Edom shall be a desolation. Every one that goeth by it shall be astonished, and shall hiss at all the plagues thereof, as in the overthrow of Sodom and Gomorrah, and the neighboring cities thereof, saith the Lord. No man shall abide there, neither shall a son of man dwell in it. Ezekiel also has a whole chapter devoted to this purpose. Behold, O Mount Seir, I am against thee, and I will stretch out mine hand against thee, and I will make thee most desolate. All this was because of their hatred against Israel, and their blasphemies on account of the desolations of Israel, which have been carried away captive. Obadiah's prophecy also is wholly against Edom, because of their violence against the seed of Jacob. It sets forth how the children of Esau rejoiced over the calamity of Israel and Judah when they were carried away captive, and how they helped on the calamity. The psalmist records this dastardly conduct of Edom when Jerusalem was taken captive to Babylon. Remember, O Lord, the children of Edom in the day of Jerusalem, who said, raise it, even to the foundation thereof. For all this, it was prophesied, the house of Jacob shall be a fire, and the house of Joseph a flame, and the house of Edom for stubble, and they shall kindle in them, and there shall not be any remaining of the house of Esau, for the Lord hath spoken it. Let us see then whether these later prophecies have been fulfilled. Whereas the Israelites were oppressed so many years in Egypt, the children of Esau were free in their mountain home to increase and prosper, and many cities were built by them in the land of Edom. The chief of these was the capital city called Petra, meaning a rock, for it was largely cut out of the rocky mountains. It stood secure, approachable only by a narrow pass, and the ruins of it indicate the existence of palaces, temples, a theater, and elaborate tombs for their kings. It was a very notable city in its day, and a great center of commerce, nations far and near bringing their goods to it. Now, although the descendants of Israel may be met all the world over, those of Esau have been cut off forever, according to the divine threatenings. The valleys, which were at one time so fertile and well cultivated, instead of being clothed with vineyards, are laid waste and covered with sand and stones. The fruitful fields which the Edomites used to till and sow are now buried beneath the sands of the wilderness. From generation to generation it shall lie waste. Writing in the ruins of Petra, Dr. W. K. Tweedy says, "The Wadi Mosa, where these remarkable ruins are found, is about 2 days' journey from the Red Sea, and so vast is the solitude that we travel for days all around this capital without beholding a trace of man, except it be some horde of Arab robbers prowling for plunder." But it was not always so. 18 centuries ago, Edom could furnish a contingent of 30,000 men to help repel the Romans from Jerusalem, and the ruins of more than 30 towns can be counted in the territory of Edom within a circuit of a few miles. Gazed at with the eye of mere wonder, Petra is a mystery in stone. Judged of by other ruins, it is unique and unmatched. Viewed historically, it is a mighty monument of fallen grandeur. In the light of Scripture, it proclaims that God is true and every man a liar. Another traveler in those parts, J.A. Willey, says, "You see a little plain with a stream crossing it, and on the plain some heaps of rubbish, a broken arch, a few prostrate columns, and all around the plain you see a perpendicular wall of rock formed by the mountains. And you see, moreover, that the rock is hewn into dwellings and tombs, and that it is covered with the most magnificent structures, not erected by the hand, but hewn in the mountains by the chisel. What ruins are these? Ah, these are the ruins of Petra, the capital of Edom. In the palaces that stood on that plain dwelt the Edomite while living, and in these tombs in the face of the cliff he reposed when dead. There is not now a single inhabitant on the spot. We are scarce near enough to see the brambles and creeping plants with which the ruins on the plain beneath us are mantled. But the hootings of the owl come drearily up the mountain, and the eagle's scream is sounding fiercely among the hills. These are now the only tenants on the site of Petra. Everything we see and hear testifies to the exact and fearful accomplishment of the doom pronounced on this city of old. Though thou shouldest make thy nest as high as the eagle, I will bring thee down from thence, saith the Lord. Also Edom shall be a desolation. Every one that goeth by it shall be astonished, and shall hiss at all the plagues thereof."